This project is co-financed by the European Commission under the European Integration Fund and is supported by the Office for the Promotion of Migrant Integration in the Department of Justice and Equality and POBO.
The content and views expressed in this program are those of the participants alone and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of POBL, the Office for the Promotion of Migrant Integration, or the European Commission.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shots. This is Sinead Parai speaking. Today our program is on the topic of seeking asylum in Ireland. As a bit of background information, for my master's thesis, I looked into the asylum system in Ireland, specifically in relation to young people under the age of 18 coming from abroad on their own. These children, who come without the presence of their parents or guardian, are known as separated children seeking asylum. When they turn 18, they are then regarded as adults and are referred to as aged out minors. My colleagues and I decided to conduct some interviews on what it means to seek asylum in Ireland, as there seems to be a lot of misinformation about the topic and about the people who find themselves in the asylum system. So we decided to go right to the source to enlighten ourselves. We spoke to some asylum seekers about their experience of seeking legal status in Ireland. In the first half of this program, you will hear an interview conducted by our own Tina Dio, who arrived in Ireland at a young age. Tina spoke to Cardo from Iraq and OJ from Ghana about their experiences of seeking asylum in Ireland. Cardo came into Ireland as a child who later aged out, and OJ came in as an adult. Please note that Cardo and OJ are pseudonyms used to protect the identities of those individuals being interviewed. And now I'd like to take you to that interview conducted by Tina.
Hello, my name is Tina Dio. I'd like to begin by sharing my experience and asking our guests about their experience of coming to Ireland as asylum seekers. How long have you been in Ireland, OJ?
2 years, 8 months.
How about you, Cardo?
3 years and a half.
Okay, I've actually been here for 4 years now. Did you choose to come to Ireland directly?
I just found myself in Ireland. I can't say I bought a ticket by myself, I just came over.
To me, I really chose to come to Ireland because I thought it's an opportunity. I was happy for coming here, but unfortunately, it was not exactly what I was expecting. What were the challenges you have faced back home?
Fight, war. I'm from Iraq, so
yeah.
I separated from my family around 2007 because my brother died there and stuff came up. Bomb explosion, war, especially with different peoples like American against Saddam Hussein regime to tell now, and Qaeda as well, and Qaeda against American, and it's all just confused, all complicated. Everyone, they just killing and killing and killing. I don't know what's going on there. So just really, to be honest with you, I'm just tired of that. So after when my brother died there, it just became so horrible. So yeah. I couldn't even stay there.
So what were your expectations when you arrived in Ireland?
To be honest with you, a lot of challenge came up, and the biggest one is just I couldn't speak English.
And what about you, OJ?
To seek a refuge, because I was running away from a potential attack from a gang.
Okay.
Yeah, but unfortunately, when I came here, I was told that if your case is not religious or political, you cannot be recognized as a refugee.
Okay.
Actually, I knew very little about Ireland. So when I was coming here, I was expecting that this is Europe, and therefore, like, things will be a little bit rosy. And because they preach democracy and everything, I thought I was going to get the chance to get involved and show what I can do. But unfortunately, when I came, it wasn't like that. I'm not allowed to work. I'm not allowed to go to school. I'm not allowed to cook for myself. Everything is done by somebody. You have to go and queue at the post office for €19.10, which is very shameful anyway.
So tell me, what challenges did you face here when you arrived, Cardo?
A lot, actually. Came here alone, like, you have to face all the stuff around you and do stuff for yourself because there is no family with you. I was in a young age, I came around 15, and I was 15, and so 15 is really young for Ireland, and be alone and do stuff by your own.
Okay, how about you, OJ?
When I first arrived here, the weather was the major challenge because I arrived in December, so I hope everybody can imagine the weather. When I came here, it's like I said earlier, I was not allowed to do anything for myself, which as a responsible person, it became very new to me.
What were you not allowing to do that you did before?
Actually, I'm a teacher.
Yes.
So I used to teach, and I used to work for myself as well. So I was kind of like very busy, and all of a sudden I found myself in this situation where I cannot do anything. I cannot even cook for myself. I cannot study. I cannot work. I cannot do anything. I cannot even take care of my children anymore. So it's like I become an irresponsible father. It makes you sad, very sad. It's like I don't feel like a human being. Three people sleeping in the same room, eating the same food every day, talking to the same people every day, talking about the same thing every day, over and over again.
It's just like a big jail.
If you could speak to the Irish policy makers, what would you say, Cardo?
To be honest, I'm just gonna say to him or her to just change a place. Just be like me, come back, tell me the story, and secondly, and leave it in a hostel for a while, and they didn't let you walk, they didn't let you go to do whatever you want to do in education way. You are not a human being actually here, like a statue moving around. The life is not easy, but this people decide on my life. One signature is gonna ruin my life. I'm just sitting here for no reason, 2.5 years.
Whatever we do today, you'll get the results tomorrow. So is the tomorrow they are breeding crazy people for tomorrow.
Okay.
In the hostel life is like the way they treat you, the way they talk to you, the way they make you feel is like you are not a human being. If I happen to get a chance to speak to a policymaker, the only thing I would tell the person is those people they have left there, they can become somebody later.
Yes.
When President Obama came here, everybody was happy. But his father, he went to US as a student, and now his son is the president of the United States of America.
It's true.
So the asylum seekers who are here today, nobody knows what they're going to be tomorrow. And now some people have been there for years. I know some people who have been there for 6 years, 7 years. What do you expect this person to become in the near future? This person is morally, he has been demoralized, low motivation. He's not a human being anymore. The person has been destroyed.
Hmm.
You see? So even me, for instance, it will take me years before I can even revive, either here or anywhere, because I'm not used to this situation. And they are creating tomorrow's problem for the whole Ireland.
Okay, so Oje, what are some of the challenges that you continue facing now?
Marginalization.
Okay.
Because I'm not a citizen. I'm not from EU.
Okay.
I'm not from this. So I cannot go to school. I cannot work. I cannot even offer any services.
So what about you, Cardo? What do you think about the financial challenges they are facing now?
Oh, it's just horrible. Nobody survive. The money is just 19 euro 10 cents for a week. Nobody going to survive on that money. At all. What you're gonna do is that 19 euro 10 cent buy shampoo, buy credit for your phone. I don't know what you're gonna do. Even the food is in the hostel, it's really bad. You can't even buy food for yourself. It's crazy. You can't even buy traveling bus ticket for school. It's just all is haunting you inside, and it's just mad. You are not normal. We face a lot of challenge back home. They should make us happy, not make us down and just breaking us down.
You know, this 1910, it makes you feel like you're not part of the community. So it's like you are living, but you are dead. It's hard. Because living on 19 euro 10 per week, while a weekly bus pass is even 22 euro, is something else.
If there could be something that it would change the situation, so what do you think it could to make the situation better?
The whole thing is, I don't know the rare idea behind keeping us in the hostels for so long. The hostel firms, they are making fat profits. For instance, last year, one of them made a profit of 1.67 million. And nobody questioned how.
Okay.
Even if you come to my hostel, they don't have a cleaner there. They don't clean the place. The toilet, no, they have never cleaned the toilet. And if you talk, the next letter you get is a deportation letter. You can't complain.
Right,
you don't have no right. So whatever you have, you have to appreciate it. Four people living in the same room, about 40 people on each floor, sharing the same two toilets. And then they don't even clean it. I've been in the hostel for about a year. Somebody put a tissue. The tissue has been there to date, meaning they have not cleaned that place for the whole 1 year.
Yes, right.
And we have three managers there. I was sad to read last year that the government spent 90 million euros on asylum seekers. I'm surprised. How? So if they are wasting this money on asylum seekers, then why? What are they getting in return? The asylum seekers are not benefiting. The government is not benefiting. So why don't they change the policy?
And everything, just the managers, the staff, the people, the company, they're taking care of the hostels. They're just getting the, all the money they're just taking for themselves. They're not spending it.
The people, the government is spending too much. The asylum seekers are not benefiting.
Something doesn't work out. It's not going to work out. So just move on.
They keep you in the hostel for years. Some of them have been here for 6 years, 7 years. And in the long run, they deport them. What do you want that person to go home and do? You want the person to go and die? And you call Ireland a Christian country? Is that how to treat a human being?
If you get maybe a statue in this country, and what's your goals?
I would like to give what I have. And I was trained as a maths teacher. I've heard it over and over again. The level of literacy and numeracy in the country are going down. If I have the opportunity now, I would like to spend my time there and give as much as I can to help improve the situation.
Okay, to me, my goals to continue my study, because I'm a student now, and the biggest dream, to be honest, I would like to be a guard in Ireland. My dad was actually a police officer, and as I saw him working like that, there's a big challenges there, but still I like to do that because I have a good communication with the community. Could you name one thing that you like about living in Ireland? OJ.
Cold weather.
How about you, Cardo?
People is nice, so that's a great thing. I have a lot of friends. I'm really happy with it, and it's really green as well. It's just nice.
Okay, to me, what I like so much about Ireland, I like the environment, I like the people, and I also like the security in the country is quite safe to me. So, okay, thank you so much. I'm so happy and proud to be with you here today. I wish all the best for you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The interview you've just heard was conducted by Tina Dio, and her guests were Cardo from Iraq and OJ from Ghana. I'd now like to share a compelling piece of music with you about immigration, the motives behind it, and the boundaries set up. I hope you enjoy it. And that was Charlie Winston. And the name of that song is In Your Hands. I hope you enjoyed that piece. If you're just joining us now, we've been talking about asylum seekers in Ireland with the aim of dispelling some serious and harmful myths about the people and about the process. Our next interview is conducted by Anne Healy with Andrew MacDonald from the Dunleary Refugee Project. The DRP provides various supports to young asylum seekers. Let's go to that interview now to hear what Andrew has to say about the work that his organization is doing.
I would like to welcome Andrew MacDonald to the program, and Andrew's a volunteer with the Dunleary Refugee Project. And I'm going to ask Andrew to describe a little bit about his role.
It's great to be on this and tell you a little bit about our organisation. We're based here in Dunleary, and this year we celebrate our 10th anniversary. A number of hostels were set up for young, underage asylum seekers in the Dunleary area. And there were a considerable number of young people under the age of 18. And there was very, very little for them. They were provided with accommodation, they were provided with food, and they were sent to school. But they had very little else going for them. So at that time, a number of people in the Dunleary area came together as initially a kind of an ad hoc organisation, and later it was more formalised and we became a registered charity. Effectively, these people, mostly from the Dunleary area and surrounding area, befriended these young people in the hostels. Dunleary Refugee Project and its volunteers were people that they were able to relate to in a different way. They weren't lawyers, they weren't the Department of Justice, they weren't the people who were making the rules for the hostels, etc. So these were young people, young teenagers, without parents, so they were able to relate to the volunteers here. So even when they left Dunleary, they kept coming back. Every penny or every cent that we get here goes on the people that we are looking after. We, not alone do we not have any staff, we are all 100% volunteers.
Clearly it sounds to me like it's a very valuable service and people trust you. These young people obviously trust you at a time, but I'm sure when they're quite vulnerable in their lives. And I'm wondering, Andrew, now, 10 years later, what it is that you have learned about, I suppose, the nature of the service that you've offered and the importance of it. What has been the most valuable part of that?
I think the most valuable part of it has probably been the friendship aspect, the fact that trust could be built up between these young people and the volunteers. When they had troubles of whatever kind, some of them serious, some of them not so serious, they have people to come to and people to talk to. And I think that is probably the most valuable service that we can give. So the main service that we provide is we want to see these young people receiving some kind of education. But one of the things we want to do is people that we're dealing with here are really at a point in their lives where they should be receiving education. They should be improving their minds and their brains instead of languishing in hostels, poor conditions, looking at the ceiling, getting more and more and more depressed. So we do our best to find different courses for them to go on. And then when we get them onto these courses, we also have to find a considerable amount of money to provide bus fares, because obviously it's no point in finding a course without providing with transportation. And that is going to cost €15 a week simply for a bus ticket for one individual. Multiply that by whatever, it's a lot of money. I think maybe what a lot of your listeners don't realise is a lot of rumours fly around, and most of them are untrue. But these young people, and indeed older asylum seekers, when they come to Ireland, if they haven't got means of their own, which they, as a general rule, they don't, they are placed into hostels. They have no control over where those hostels may be. They might be in Dublin. Nowadays, they're far more likely to be in other parts of the country, anywhere from Donegal to Kerry, Waterford, you name it, and they are there. And they are provided in these hostels with a bed. Very often they're three or sometimes even four to a room. They are fed. The quality of that food varies, obviously, from hostel to hostel. And apart from that, the only money that they are provided with is the princely sum of €19.10 per week. And out of that €19 a week, they are expected to provide bus fares for themselves, to provide different kinds of toiletries, any entertainment, etc. So they have absolutely nothing. I would like to see a system implemented whereby the cases were dealt with fairly, where there was provision for appeal, but at the same time, decisions were made quickly. Give you an idea, this very day, I have been with a young man who has recently been given his leave to remain, and he has been living 9 years in hostel conditions. But that's not good enough.
Yeah. I mean, I presume, Andrew, the impact on that and those young people must be pretty horrendous, and they're already have come from very difficult situations. You know, what are usually circumstances for people arriving here in this country looking for asylum and for leaving their own country?
I'll give you a broad answer on that. And the countries they come from, you know, Ethiopia, Rwanda, Angola, many African countries, where there has been, or indeed still is, an ongoing civil war kind of situation. And all I can tell you is that there have been occasions where I've been talking to some people, and maybe it's looked as if their case isn't going terribly well. And I have actually said to them, you know, would you even think about going back? And I just get a pitying look, and they shake their head and they say, you don't know what it's like back there.
I think that statement, that comment by those young people highlights why a service like this is so crucial in supporting them, because we don't know what it's like. for these people? And going back to a comment you made earlier on in relation to what, you know, what is fair for these people, and it seems like from your answer that maybe they're not often, they're given the runaround, or they're not often given the supports that they could do with. Would I be right in assuming that?
The accommodation that they're put up in, I mean, I don't think anyone, any fair-minded person would expect them to be put up in five-star accommodation. But at the same time, the standard, the quality of the accommodation they're given is pretty poor. And I think, and maybe somebody could investigate this, it is costing you, I, and the taxpayer a considerable amount of money. In other words, the government is not getting value for money out of the hostel system. And the young people themselves are not in a position to complain. They're told that they can complain and that there are ways and means of doing this. But again, you have to remember the background. They are afraid of authority. They're afraid of officialdom. And also, they are frequently afraid of being penalised by the people who actually run the hostels. Now, some of the people that run the hostels are absolutely superb, but others leave a lot to be desired. And of course, the luck of the draw where people will be sent. And the fear that they have when they're living in a hostel for a period of time, they have all their support systems in the area. Maybe they're going to school. Maybe they're on a football team. They have their friends, and they don't want to lose that.
I'm wondering, what is the most satisfying part of this job? Lots of frustrations, obviously, when you hear the people's stories and all that's happening to them, and fundraising and it's money drying up. But for you personally, Andrew, what is it that keeps you coming in here and keeps yourself involved?
There are a lot of young people around, and their enthusiasm, their generosity, and their kindness very often is something that keeps us going. And when I look round at my own situation and the situation of my peers and so on, and I look at the behaviour of these young people and the kind of life they have, I'm absolutely in awe of them and how good they are and how they cope. I learn an awful lot from them, and I think what I learn is fortitude, honesty, and strange as it may seem, even though most of the people that come through our doors here on a Monday night, sometimes as many as 50 or 60, there is hardly a troublemaker among them. And I would say, in fact, their standard of behaviour is probably better than a cross-section of any society.
Andrew, I'm wondering, as we come towards the end of the interview, is there anything I haven't asked that you'd like to include?
I would ask your listeners, when they see somebody, maybe with a different coloured skin, and they're travelling on a bus, or they're going to school, or whatever, before they start sounding off about all of these things that these people are getting, let them check it out properly. I think that's very, very important. And I'd say one final thing. Speak to some of them. As a human being, don't see a foreigner. Don't see someone with a dark skin. Give them a smile. Give them a thank you. Speak to them. They will respond, and you will gain more.
Wonderful final words. And just to let listeners know, Andrew, if in any way they'd like to get involved, contribute, or volunteer, how can they go about that?
Probably the easiest way would be by email, and it's Dunleary Refugee Project, all one word, @ireland.com.
Well, Andrew, it's been my pleasure and very inspiring for me to listen to all your fine work, and I hope that the fundraising will improve.
Oh yeah! If there's anyone out there with a checkbook and has a niche in their finger, get writing. We certainly won't refuse anything, and I can tell you it'll go to good use.
And that's all we have time for today. I hope you found the program informative, and I hope that the discussion allowed our listeners to feel somewhat more informed about asylum seekers. I would like to thank Anne Healy and Tina Dio for conducting interviews, and Cardo, OJ, and Andrew McDonald for taking the time to be interviewed. This program was produced and presented to you by me, Shanette Badai. Please join us again next Monday at 6:30 for another Culture Shots program. Thank you and good evening.
The content and views expressed in this program are those of the participants alone and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of POBL, the Office for the Promotion of Migrant Integration, or the European Commission.
This project is co-financed by the European Commission under the European Integration Fund and is supported by the Office for the Promotion of Migrant Integration in the Department of Justice and Equality and POBL.